Nice to see everyone. Welcome. Good morning. So I wanted to talk about balancing ideology on the one hand and pleasure on the other, how to cultivate both environments for ourselves, for our children, for I guess any other institution or situation we find ourselves in life. And I guess let me start off with the question, which is, why would someone, ourselves, children, high school children, post-high school children, elementary school children, why would people be interested in committing, attracted to Torah? Why are people interested in dedicating lives, time, energy, money, investing, taking it serious enough that you make big sacrifices, if that's the right word? Why do people do that? And I think that's a critical question to ask if you want to help cultivate an environment where we can encourage our children / Talmidim / whoever else is around. Once you understand the principles as to why people can and often and should be willing to commit themselves to Torah, I think it'd be very beneficial to use those principles, use those ideas, and hopefully kind of facilitate other environments, ones where children can grow up comfortably enjoying the same types of commitments and dedication to Torah, attraction to Torah that we ourselves are trying to cultivate. Let me phrase the question a little bit differently. Often, I have Talmidim and Talmidot ask me the following question: why should I invest 100% if I'm not 100% convinced? Meaning, maybe, and there's a lot to be gained from it, but it's very difficult to put yourself 100% in if you only believe in this thing somewhere between 51 and 99%. And even more so if it's somewhere between 1 and 50%. Yet nonetheless, I think most of us in this room, if not all of us, would probably say, I am somewhat convinced between 51 and 99% that got it difficult to know. You can believe 100%, but belief means I consciously made an effort to take that leap of faith. Difficult to know 100%, yet we've done it. And the question is, how have we done it? Why do people do it? And how do we, again, cultivate an environment where children and our children feel comfortable and excited and willing to do that? I'm a big believer that the two most... Let me take a question, but take it back for a second. If I had to ask you to make a list of everything you've ever wanted in life, anything you've ever sought after, whether it was back in school passing a test, a house, a car, a job, popularity, respect in someone's eyes, if you made it, even a glass of water, you made a list of everything you ever wanted in all of your life. It'd be very, very long and probably difficult to do without incredible siyata dishmaya. You know, it'd be difficult because we forget things all the time. But let's just say you can come up with some list of everything you've ever wanted. And we put all of our lists together, and we combined it with everyone who have ever lived. The theory I'd like to posit is that there really would only be two categories of things. Or in other words, everything we want as people is a means to only one of two ends. There are really only two things that mankind wants. Number one, happiness, pleasure, enjoyment. Number two, truth, fulfillment, meaning, purpose. Everything we've wanted in life, it's because we thought it would bring us to one of those two ends. If you ever wanted to be really wealthy, why did you want to be wealthy? The answer is because you thought it would bring you to happiness. Why did you want a nice new car? You thought the car would bring you to happiness. Why did you want to be happy? You can't go further than that. You just do. You just want to be happy. Why is religion so meaningful in our life? The answer is, why is religion so important to us? The answer is because we find it meaningful. It's our best shot at truth. It's our best opportunity at accomplishing something really, really profound, profoundly deep and purposeful. Why do you want to live a purposeful life? You just do. Why do you want to live a truthful life? Why do you value truth over lies and falsehood? The answer is we do. And the point I'm trying to make is that there really only are two things that we want in life. One is truth slash purpose slash meaning slash fulfillment, to do things that are valuable and worthwhile. Number two are things that are enjoyable, pleasuresome, fun. And I think that really captures what we want and how we make our decisions. Most of our decisions are grinding these two different variables together. And on the one hand, I know it's the right thing to do X, and I find that more truthful and meaningful, and therefore I'll go with it. But sometimes I say, I know it's right, but I'm just not interested. I'll find something else more enjoyable. And ultimately, we're kind of toying around with these two different variables. In the world of Chassidus, the two polar opposites in terms of this these paradigms are, on the one hand, Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov, and on the other hand, the Kotzker Rebbe. Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov is the one who coined the phrase mitzvah gedola liyot besimcha. I thought it was a pasuk in Mishlei for most of my life. It turns out the whole statement's 200 years old, and the basic point is that the happier you are when you serve Hashem, the more it'll continue. We should enjoy serving Hashem. The Kotzker Rebbe stood at almost the antithesis to, ideologically. He felt totally different. The Kotzker Rebbe, the rumor has it, is that he took off some time to meditate and kind of realign his thoughts because he wasn't as pure and sincere and honest and genuine as possible. And supposedly he did that for 19, not seconds or even minutes, or even hours, or even days, or even weeks, or even months. Rumor has it he sat for 19 years meditating, trying to refocus himself on truth and purpose and being an emissary, probably something he would say. And I think those are two different categories, shittas, styles, and avodas Hashem. And I think ultimately what we want is really both. We want to live lives that were meaningful, purposeful, things that we've done, valuable things, and in some sense we want to enjoy the ride as much as possible. In truth, I think it's Pshat the Pasuk, Ivdu Es Hashem Besimcha. Ivdu Es Hashem means serve Hashem, do what's right, do what's purposeful, do what's meaningful, do something real. But how should you do it? Besimcha, enjoy the ride. Bo'u Lefanav means come in front of God. Again, MS, God, truth. But simultaneously do it bernana, with song, with excitement. I'll add on the following thought because I think it's insightful and true. If you only look for one without the other, it's difficult to find either. Meaning, if you are interested in only happiness and all you want to do is pleasure yourself, it's very difficult to find meaning and purpose in that pursuit of only pleasure. That's pretty self-explanatory, self-evident. If a person's only partying and drinking or whatever they think is going to bring them pleasure, it's very difficult to look back and say, I lived a purposeful, meaningful life. Interestingly, and perhaps more of a surprise, I believe the reverse is true as well. If a person's only looking for truth, if a person's only, they see themselves as looking for truth and looking for purpose, and only that, and no sense of enjoyment, no sense of pleasure, no sense of doing things that are fun, that kind of fill out the entire picture, I think people end up often almost like skewing their vantage point, because it becomes this sense, or it can and often does become the sense of, I found the truth, almost like an intellectual, you see it sometimes like a persona that's only intellectual and only thinking about cerebral things. And not only do they not enjoy or often life, but sometimes they kind of get caught up in their own cerebral perspective and lose proper perspective on the rest of the world. I can almost like picture some, you know, prestigious professor sitting in his office with a pipe, figuring out why, you know, he's uncovered the real truth and no one else has uncovered the real truth. He's miserable, lonely, and isolated, as well as lost perspective on the rest of the world because he's so convinced and wrapped up in his own intellectual pursuits and findings. I'm a big believer life is about synthesizing truth with happiness, pleasure with meaning. And I think that's why we commit. The reason why we commit to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the reason why we commit to a religious life, I think is because it quenches the two biological thirsts we have. If you hated everything about religion, it'd be very unlikely you would stick with it, even if you thought it was true. You look at the statistics and you hear these interviews of kids who have gone off the derech, kids who are no longer interested. Most of them, it's coming from a place that I just don't enjoy it. I didn't find it, I didn't connect to it, I didn't like it. There's a sense of, and you hear it in different formats. I had a fourth grade Rebbe I didn't like. I felt that I was being pressured into this thing. I didn't enjoy the social environment. Everyone was fake and I was, there's a certain discomfort. It's very difficult to do things day in and day out that you don't want to do. It requires almost a meta-human amount of willpower and commitment and dedication. And therefore, I think one of the most important things to find in our own and our children's avodas Hashem is a sense of happiness and enjoyment while you're doing it. It has to be fun, enjoyable, positive on some level, and simultaneously, if you don't believe this is true, it's very difficult to commit to it as well. Even if it's fun, and even if it's enjoyable. Once in a while you hear these people claiming worth of practice is like, works, I can't imagine why it would. Because once something more enjoyable comes along, quickly there's no sense of obligation, there's no sense of responsibility. And therefore, the more I do self-introspection, the more I understand myself, the more I speak to others, I think they've come across similar conclusions. The reason why we do everything in life, because we think it'll bring us to either closer to truth or closer to happiness, closer to purpose or closer to something enjoyable. The reason why we commit to religion, and often the amount we commit to religion, is directly correlated to how much we believe it's true / how much we enjoy it. I believe it's 100% true and enjoy it fully, you find fully committed people. People who are moderately convinced it's true and enjoy parts of it struggle with throwing themselves in fully, and I understand it. I don't fully know anyway, and I'm not really enjoying it. And therefore, both in terms of our own understandings and our own commitments, I guess to quickly go back and answer the original question, which is how are you supposed to commit 100% to something you cannot be 100% certain of? Well, the answer is if you enjoy it, offsets that counter pressure. Let me explain that. Meaning, I look at myself and tell myself, 100%? I don't know. I can't know 100%. There were some Rishonim who felt you could, but the overwhelming majority of some Yachronish thought, you find it in many of the Mefarshim later on, there's a Meshach Hachman, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and others. The definition of belief means you don't know, you're taking a leap of faith. Why am I willing to take that leap of faith? Why would I do that? It comes with all sorts of claustrophobic don'ts and you can'ts, and who knows what the answer is. I genuinely love the opportunity I have to live a religious lifestyle. A, I enjoy the mitzvos, and I really do. And I've learned how to enjoy them. I've earned happiness. I think happiness is something you earn. People don't often realize that. I've earned happiness by working hard, particularly in mitzvos. And simultaneously, I genuinely appreciate and even find a sense of happiness in knowing I'm doing something meaningful and purposeful. I like to tell my Talmidim, the second greatest gift that Kadosh Baruch Hu ever gave me was the opportunity to live. The fact that I exist, the fact that I'm here, the fact that I breathe is such an unbelievably powerful and important gift. I cannot be makir tov as much as I should be. It's the second greatest thing I've ever received. The only thing I've ever received that was greater than my existence itself, at least according to my own understanding of myself, is the opportunity to do something meaningful and purposeful with it. The fact that I can live a life, not just be born and have arbitrary circumstantial things occur to me, but I can do something really worthwhile with my time. I think that purpose, that meaning, is what gives me unbelievable excitement. If I'd have only had life and not the opportunity for that meaning for purpose, I'd be less than 50% as happy. I'd be significantly less happy. And therefore, I think what works for me and the people I know, and my Talmidim, and my family, and my friends, is that there's a genuine sense of, there's a very good chance this is true. 100%, I don't think we can get to. Not of knowledge. You can take that leap of faith again, and the reason why we take that leap of faith is because we think it's enjoyable. But let me say it differently. If I would say this, a 70% chance this is the most meaningful, purposeful, truthful thing you could do, would you do it? The answer is, well, it depends. If it was just touching the cell phone, yeah, because it's easy. If it's living a dedicated, claustrophobic life of don'ts, you know, that restrictions and things that you can't do, that's much more challenging. So if you're 100%, you could do it, but you're only 70, so why would you do it? I think the answer why we do it is because it's not that bad. The sacrifice is not that great. Why is the sacrifice not that great? The answer is because we enjoy it. We've learned to enjoy it. And therefore, I think those are really the primary psychological, emotional, call them what you want, principles I wanted to establish. I want to apply that in a moment, but first, questions, comments, thoughts, if anyone has to, feel free to add in. Okay, so I'll just continue. Yeah?
If you're going to touch on dominating the mind of people in one of those places.
Yeah, I'll get there in a second. That's the application, probably one of the more difficult ones. I'll get back to davening specifically. It's an excellent point. Yeah.
I would just say that it's not only religion. I think it's, you know, studying, devoting time to studying, to schoolwork, as opposed to always being on the phone with your friends, always being out, always being, you know what I'm saying? It's anything that requires some kind of sacrifice.
I would agree, but I would say also, at least for me, and it could be people who feel differently, I feel that studying and getting good grades, although very important, it just doesn't compare to doing something that I believe God defines as meaningful and purposeful. Unless you think He defined studying as purposeful. I think studying is more of a means than an ends in and of itself. I kind of feel studying is very important because I'll have a good job, because I value the material, because I want to make a nice parnasa. And again, it's a worthwhile endeavor to take. I just feel, personally, what do I want to do with my life? I'd rather something meaningful and purposeful. I find whatever God says meaningful and purposeful, more so than study. But I hear the point. In any event, I do think these are two major primary things that really drive us to do and act and make decisions the way we make them. If anyone's interested, I'll just take a small little detour and just say, it's an interesting point. It's almost like The Matrix. I've never seen the movie The Matrix, but I've heard a lot about it. Every time I give this example, I was like, oh, The Matrix. So I'll just start off with The Matrix. And if you know what I'm talking about, great, because you'll beat me. If I had to ask you, if you can, they told me to take the pill, but I was giving a different example. You put on some type of virtual reality. You lay down on the couch, and you're going to go to sleep for the rest of your life. From now on, maybe yesterday, but you put on some virtual reality. And in that virtual reality, you can be whoever you wanted to be, go wherever you wanted to go. You can be the smartest, brightest, wealthiest, funniest, most confident, most religious. You can be Moshe Rabbeinu and LeBron James in one person if that's your dream. An interesting model, but that's the anything you wanted. Would you consciously go into that state of slumber even if you knew you'd forget that you made the decision? So I'm not asking you to answer right now, but it's an interesting question. I think the reason why you would go is because there's like unlimited pleasure and enjoyment and fun. The reason why you might not go is because you'd be sacrificing the opportunity to do something real in this world. Like me personally, I want to really be with my wife, not just think I am. I want to actually talk to her. I want to have a conversation with her. I want to actually do mitzvot in this world, not just feel and think like I do. So for me, I'd be probably hesitant. Whether you would go or not into that box, and I respect both opinions, I think boils down to this question. I can't even promise you that we're living in the world right now is real. For all we know, we took the pill 20 minutes ago and here we are in each other's figment of imagination. Unlikely, but possible. My point is, the reason why many people would not go in is because they very much genuinely value truth. The reason why you would go in is either because you're less happy and you want to find more happiness, or you don't value truth as much, or whatever the cheshbon would be. And again, I'm not passing judgment. I just think that's like a great, I guess, nafkamina type of case. As to the balance between these two things, you have to like, you know, isolate the two variables and figure out which one you'd prefer. That's like an interesting way of thinking about it. In any event, the point I'm making is not about choosing which one. The point I'm making is about trying to cultivate an environment where we can educate, inspire ourselves, family, children, etc., to take advantage of both. The more our children grow up believing this is real or probably real, and the more, and that's somewhat in our control, somewhat in our control. And perhaps even more in our control is, do they enjoy the ride? Are they enjoying religion along the way? And to that, I think it's far more, not completely, not even close to completely, but far more in our control to help cultivate environments, events, situations where people enjoy growing, moving forward religiously. A couple quick tips about that. Obviously, there have to be rules in families, but I'm a big believer in inspiring more than enforcing. I think the more your children and younger people have great older religious role models, the more they will enjoy being involved in religious activity. The greatest thing I've ever done in my life for my children was going to Chinuch HaMerabin HaKotel and a few of the girls' schools as well. And the best thing I've done for my boys is bring over the HaKotel boys. The best thing I've done for my girls is bring over the seminary girls that I teach, and they come and they spend time, and all of a sudden my kids have the greatest role models that I could even ask for. And they just kind of naturally, the downside is that they're all like 8 and 10 and 11, 12, thinking that they're Shana Aleph kids. But there's a, you know, but I do believe the pros significantly outset the cons in that area. I do believe that one-on-one time is critical. I think the more people get one-on-one time, the more they appreciate it. From rebbeim, from teachers, from parents. Whatever it's worth, one of the things we found successful in my family was tucking the kids in. I give them really good tucks in. Like, I take about 20 minutes per kid. I got 5 kids. I don't do it every night, but I try and invest once every week or so to give them a 20-minute talk each kid per night. And the reason why is because if the choice is, let's say, watching television versus talking to Abba, so I'm going to lose, all 5 kids losing to watching television. If the choice is talking on the phone to their friends or talking to Abba, they're going to talk to their friends. Unfortunately, I'm going to lose most of the battles if it's the other choice is talking to Abba. The one battle I feel very confident about is if the other choice is going to sleep. When it's going to sleep or talking to Abba, I win every time. Oh, every time. So I kind of stack the deck and kind of manipulate the it's my game to play. So, okay, everyone in bed. Who wants to have to come schmooze with them in their bed at night for a few minutes? Oh, the kids can't get enough. Not in addition to my ego, which obviously takes a positive, But I think it's just a great opportunity, the one-on-one time, to talk and to schmooze and to hear what's in their mind and to try to spin and navigate their thought process in a way. Call it brainwashing if you want. I think it's slightly less intense than that, but, to each person their own. And I feel that's great time, and they feel they connect talking about ideology, hashkafa, and values with me. And I find that unbelievably, unbelievably important. If, let's say, a kid's too big that they don't like, these tucks, and again, I haven't hit that age. My biggest one's 12, still loves it. So one-on-one breakfasts are great. I'm a big believer one-on-one time, just talking and kind of helping younger kids, you can navigate brainwash significantly more. Older kids, you kind of feel a little more subtle with, but I'm a big believer that we can, I think that helps kids feel, I wouldn't call it happy in the direct sense, but much more comfortable, which I guess is really the same department anyway, with themselves as committed people. How am I doing time-wise?
I just want to add that I don't think it stops when the child is older. I think it goes on. I have children that are grandparents, and I still try to do that.
So, good, good.
So I think
good.
It goes on forever.
But I was planning, but my kids are a little younger, so I look good, good. I'll take the davening question. I'll try to get back to it briefly. We'll have a few more questions. I'll try to get people out on time because I know we kind of got held up, but I'll try my best to offset that by letting you out on time. Davening is tricky. Davening is tricky. The reason why davening is tricky is for a few reasons. Number one is even the non-ADD kids in the world are like closer to ADD than we were, than we would like, or whatever it is. And therefore, davening can get very boring very quickly, especially the world we live in. You get quick answers to quick things very quickly. Davening is not as, you don't always see the answer. You certainly don't always see it as a yes. You don't always see it directly. Additionally, we have a very deep problem with emunah in our davening. And I was talking to a particular kid. He walks up and says, Rebbe, I have a philosophical question that, really bothers me. Do you mind if I ask it to you? Do I mind? Of course I don't mind. So he framed the question as follows. He says, Rebbe, the question bothers me a lot. If religious people pray more, and we really believe that prayer has the ability to work. So the more religious you are, seemingly the longer life expectancy should be, right? You should expect religious people to have far fewer diseases, living significantly more. If prayer really works, so people who pray should live significantly more. So I told the guy, it's a really interesting question. I sat and thought about it for a second, and then I remembered having heard a statistic, and again, I don't remember the exact details. It may have been America, maybe the world. I think it was America. I think in America, the life expectancy rate for religious people of all religions is 7 years longer, something like that. I said, I don't know in Israel, and I don't know Jews versus non-Jews. I'm sure if you look into it, my gut would be the same. He's like, oh, probably that makes sense, but it's all about community and all about belief and emotion. And I said, I'm sure that's part of it, but it's unfair you to say the only way I can believe in God is that the following results are true. Turns out the following results are true, and he's still unwilling to take those results. And the reason where this is coming from, and I get him, is because we're so nuanced and sophisticated, and I'm glad we are, that sometimes we have a very difficult time believing that God will just straightforward, you know, they say no atheist in a foxhole. Unless you're in a foxhole, it's difficult to believe that God's, that prayer really works. And I guess my response to that is twofold. Number one, I think we have to continue doing a better job of allowing people to believe they're in, allowing people to know that prayer has a positive impact in them above and beyond being answered. You learn how to really believe that God's in control. You learn how to believe that God's the boss. You learn how to believe that, you know, he's in charge. You internalize those values, very important. Number two, the more you pray for the things Chazal want us to pray for, the more you learn how to internalize the values that Chazal want us to internalize. We want to value knowledge, healthy people, parnasa for people, Mashiach coming. So Shemoneh Esrei is full of that stuff. Those are the values we're supposed to internalize. And perhaps the bigger surprise is, and this I think requires a little bit of delicacy, because we do believe that prayer comes true. The philosophical understanding of that is beyond my time and scope, but certainly worthwhile to deal with. And I think far too often you find people who see themselves as very sophisticated and have a tough time believing prayer really works, and people who believe who prayer really works and not necessarily coming off as the most sophisticated people. I think that's a bigger question and topic in general. I think prayer just really strikes at the heart of it. But I do believe that the major issue with prayer and tefillah is that the more, again, when I was like in fifth grade, I had an easy time davening. I was when I was 12 years old, I'm in Baal Tshuva, so I was going to a non-firm sleepaway camp for most of my life. And I remember post eighth grade, I was switching from public school to yeshiva. It was my last summer going to non-religious sleepaway camp. The camp was called Bronx House Emanuel in Copake, New York. It's run by the Federation. And I was like the firmest kid in the camp. You know, I didn't keep Shabbos, but when they went to McDonald's, I didn't eat, you know. And I remember the night before camp, lying in my bed and bawling my eyes out. It was probably my most powerful tefillah I've ever had in my life. I wanted Hashem to bring the Mashiach just so I wouldn't have to go to camp and not put on tefillah and be Mechal Shabbos and not wear tzitzis for a month. It was my most powerful tefillah. And I was bawling and bawling. Now, looking back in retrospect, I feel two different, almost opposing feelings about that tefillah. On the one hand, powerful, and I really wish sometimes I can go back and reconnect to the incredible emotional depth I've touched with that particular tefillah. Simultaneously, it was probably the most egocentric, selfish tefillah I've ever had in my life. My basic point was, God, change the entire plan for the cosmos, because there's a 12-year-old kid who doesn't have enough peer pressure, a 13-year-old kid, who doesn't have enough strength to handle and talk to his peers with a sense of confidence. Looking back, I would have been disappointed if God took everything he valued in the world and just said, the heck with that, there's a 13-year-old kid crying over here. So there is a certain natural, I guess, as we get older, we become more sophisticated, and sometimes it's kind of tough to reconnect to that naivety. That having been said, I don't think tefillah is going to be a lot of fun. Maybe the Kol Bach Minyanim a little bit, you know, but you can't do that every day, at least most of us can't. We don't have enough time and emotional interest. You know, you can feel it can be fun once in a while, enjoyable. That's really more on the side of you do what's right because it's right, the truth side. And I think the way we have to tackle that is by convincing ourselves, while not sacrificing on a sense of sophistication and profound perspective of the world and everything that, like, the that part of our personalities consists of. I think we have to remind ourselves and internalize the deep value tefillah works, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens. Again, the philosophical answers to this particular question, you know, why would God ever listen to me? Doesn't he already have a plan to do what's best for the world anyway? Is beyond the scope of this particular topic, but I do believe that that may help. But the Mahalach, I believe, is we believe in this very strongly. We believe it works. We believe it's what you're supposed to do. And therefore, we take it seriously. But even that, you know, you find many, many sources in the Amar Chazal. One thing you have to constantly be working on, tefillah, doesn't happen naturally. It really requires a lot of work. There's no shortcuts to that. Am I doing time-wise? I'm supposed to finish right about now. So, a few more minutes. Any other questions, thoughts, questions, anything else? Okay, have a wonderful afternoon. I'm supposed to finish now. It's 12:30. Perfect. I didn't call. What time am I supposed to finish?
No.
How are you? Good to see you.
Good.
Yeah, nice to see you. I saw.
Yeah, Jim.
It just left a second ago. But. All right, good.
Going back.